Baylor's spring game can generally be considered a success, but what did we learn about the quarterback battle? Did Gary Bohannon and Blake Shapen separate themselves from one another? This is Locked On Baylor.
You are Locked On Baylor, your daily podcast on the Baylor Bears, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, folks, we now welcome in Travis Roeder of Sikkim365.com. Again, thank you for making Locked On Baylor your first listen every single day. Travis, my man, first and foremost, thanks for coming on, as always.
Oh, you're welcome. Sorry, I just figured you were going to keep doing your thing there. My bad.
Second and second most, though. Look, when you've got a fourth string quarterback unloading 50-yard bombs for your 65-yard bombs for your football team, that's probably a good sign, right?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, you want to have four really I watched three or four straight years of Baylor football where the quarterback couldn't throw more than like 45 or 50 yards. So that was pretty awesome.
Certainly an awesome play. One of many on Saturday in a spring game that I would consider generally a success. In fact, that's pretty universal. Everyone I've talked to has been pretty impressed with what they saw in the spring game, which starts with experience up front on both sides, obviously. But part of this spring game, I was reminiscent, like I was looking back on last year's spring game, remembering how discombobulated it was. You had Jeff Grimes just come in. They're coming off a 2-7 season, and you're just hoping Baylor's going to be good. It felt like this had so much more structure and just looked like a complete football team. I know you've probably slept since then, but even compared to last year, it feels like this team's in a much better spot based off a spring game performance.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like the team that just played in the Sugar Bowl. Obviously not the exact same, but when you look at just the overall level of quality, the preparedness, kind of the integrity and the integration of the offense, how everything looks cohesive defensively, like they're coached by Dave Aranda and Ron Roberts. They know what they're doing, right? So this is just a team that has an identity. They're building on what they built last year. They laid the foundation last year, and they still struggled in many areas. But because their foundation was so strong, that's what allowed a team that was basically running like 30 offensive plays or some ridiculously small number like that, you know, to achieve such highs because they mastered what they built already. And it just looks like now that they're just kind of, you know, building brick by brick on top of that. This isn't a team that's trying to figure out who they are. They know who they are. They're just kind of making tweaks and changes here and there, replacing guys here and there, but overall heading in that same direction, the same program direction that Aranda set forth.
Travis, you know, watching the running back room, and you said on this very podcast, I think 2 weeks ago, that no matter who is at running back, you've got five offensive linemen who are going to carry. Like, put me or you back there. We'll get you a couple of yards, hopefully.
Absolutely not.
It felt like even still, like Tay McWilliams and Squirrel Williams were the two guys that kind of stood out to me as dudes who just were carrying the football successfully, both behind the offensive line and at the second level when they got there, powering the ball forward. Were you impressed, unexpectedly impressed with either of those guys?
I wasn't unexpectedly impressed with Squirrel. I mean, I guess to some degree I was really impressed with how much they were using him. I knew that on any individual play that you gave him the ball, that he would look the way he did. He's just that good. Go back and watch his high school tape. Go back and watch him in 2020 when he was playing in the incoherent Larry Fedora and George Munoz offense, and he was like still carrying them somehow. The guy is a, you know, generational, insanely talented running back. So you know that anytime he gets the ball, he's going to look like that. It's just like, how many times is he going to get the ball? It appears like they're going to trust his injury, maybe not give him the ball 25 times a game, but he looks like he's going to be a feature aspect of the offense. That was really cool to see. Tay McWilliams is a freak in much different ways. Obviously, he's 6'1", 220, a much bigger back. Nobody's going to be as good like at the line of scrimmage as Abram Smith was last year. I mean, Abram was so good at turning those like 0 to 2 yard runs last year into 4 and 5 yards somehow. Like he would just get it done. I don't think Tay is quite that way. My worry with him was that he would be a guy who would get caught up in the trash at the line of scrimmage. And because he's a guy who wants to hit the second level, I had a friend describe him perfectly to me. He said, he's a stallion who wants to run free. That's what Tay is. And yeah. So, but you know, you got to earn the right to run free by getting all that work done at the line of scrimmage. And so he did do a lot of that kind of dirty work that I wasn't sure if he was capable of doing. So Baylor has two great backs in Squirrel and Tay McWilliams.
I liked both those guys, and the offensive line is the offensive line, right? And the defensive line is the defensive line. Granted, those are very cookie cutter statements, but I think they speak within themselves because you have so much experience on both sides. Mm-hmm. Then the other big question that everyone was kind of looking toward is wide receiver. And I feel like, you know, from down the line, like Cam Bonner or Monterey Baldwin, even a couple guys that you throw in there, you're like, oh, hey, well, welcome. In total, this receiving core, you said 2 weeks ago, does not need a new piece. They're all right here and will be just fine with what they have. Do you still stand by that based off you saw Saturday, what you saw Saturday, and why?
Yeah, I was very pleasantly, I was pleased with what I saw. And really, I can't remember if I said it on this podcast, but, you know, the reason I haven't been worried about Baylor's wide receiver core is because Baylor has two really, really good upperclassmen tight ends in Ben Sims and Drake Dabney, who are going to be on the field like all the time. They're going to, you know, not all the time, literally, but right. Baylor's going to play with two tight ends the majority of the time. When you play with two tight ends, that means there's only two wide receivers on the field. Baylor has enough talent on this wide receiving core to where they could find 4 to 5 guys to roll with this season to give them a solid two deep. One of them hopefully becomes like pretty dominant. You get a couple other who become really reliable, and all of a sudden you've got a really good offense. And I think we saw seeds of that. I think Monterey Baldwin probably has the chance to be Baylor's best overall wide receiver. Is he a guy that you can target every down on slants and stuff like that? No, but I think he's a guy that you can get him the ball enough to where he becomes that kind of very, very prominent offensive player. And then you've got a group of other guys that are kind of fighting to be that, the role that Tyquan Thornton filled last year, which is the every down, base down, just throw in a slant on first and 10. You were looking to Tyquan, and you've got guys like Josh Cameron, Armani Winfield, Javon Gibson, and Hal Presley when he comes back from his broken foot that are all fighting for that role. So I just think like there's enough talent there. It's where you can say like you only need one or two of those guys to really, really pan out for this to be a good offense. And I think we saw that they're well on their way to doing so.
Travis, the last question I want to pitch you before we get into quarterback talk and the analysis of those guys on Saturday, Josh Fleeks, you know, from what I saw at the running back spot, and I'm not Dave Aranda, I'm not Jeff Grimes, but from what you saw on Saturday, does it look like the move for Fleeks to running back is going to be organic enough that it makes the most sense of this offense?
I was pretty high on the move. I wasn't, you know, he didn't have a good day in the spring game. The main question is he was with the twos the whole day, which the twos are especially rough in a spring game because offensive line tends to be a position where you need like 15 or 16 guys rotating through to maintain like a full practice. But in the spring, you have like 4 or 5 freshmen who aren't there yet. And so they're running with like 8 or 9 scholarship offensive linemen right now. So they had a walk on at left tackle, the second string. And so when you're running behind that against Baylor's first team defensive line, who is like one of the best 3 or 4 defensive lines in the country, that's not set up for great success. So he looked really hesitant. He looked like he didn't know where to run with the ball, but maybe there wasn't anywhere to run with the ball. That's the main question. Is he can, does he continue to look hesitant if he's getting first team reps? The fact that he didn't get any first team reps, I think kind of leads you into one direction or the other on that answer. But he's a dream athlete. You just hope he can put it together. Hope things work out.
So Travis, the next thing that I want to get into is quarterback play based off of the spring game, but promise that Travis is not going anywhere, but I got to tell you about AG1 Athletic Greens. AG1, if you want better gut health, is for you. 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens all in one scoop you put in your glass of water every single day. It is safe, friendly, dairy-free, gluten-free, paleo, vegan. If that's what you are, it is for you. Costs less than $3 a day, so you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your coffee habit. Athletic Greens has 7,000 five-star reviews as well. AG1, right now, reclaim your health. Arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. One scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is visit athleticgreens.com/college, athleticgreens.com/college to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, so Travis, QB play, huge question in the offseason, and we already mentioned C.J. Rogers off the top of the show, who obviously is not vying for a spot, neither is Kyren Drones. It's Blake Shapen or Gary Bohannon. And based on Saturday's performance, you get a small sample size. I read your Sikkim365.com piece, recommend it to anyone out there listening. Small sample size of both of these guys, but in what you saw from them, it looks like Blake Shapen had the better day.
Yeah, I mean, he did have the better day. You know, when I charted it out, Blake had 15 called pass plays. Gary had 14. On my kind of crude grading system that I came up with, I gave Blake like 4 like plus, like top tier level throws that were just kind of like wow level throws. So 4 out of 15, that's a huge percentage for great throws. But he also had 4 or 5 negative throws, which were just like either terrible ones or ones that are just like just not good. And so I think with him, the highs were high. He has really high highs and lower lows, where I think with Gary, it was very much the opposite picture, where everything was kind of more in the middle, less spectacular throws, but fewer disastrous throws. And so I think that kind of speaks to maybe the difference in their games. I mean, it's, I think with what I've seen from several people say, and I think I agree with it, is, you know, in general, like, you probably have a higher ceiling with Shapen, but maybe the floor is a little bit lower, especially when you bring into the factor that his frame is a lot smaller. Both games that he started in Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, he got smashed and very clearly like wasn't the same quarterback after he got hit super hard. So that's a question. But his arm talent is just on another level from Gary's. And Gary has a really strong and a really good arm. Blake just kind of has that stereotypical, like, had played shortstop in high school, like can do all the different arm angles and has the touch and everything that Gary doesn't necessarily have. But I do think there's a lot to say for Gary, who has been known as the hardest worker on the team for 4 or 5 years. And that's not something that they're only saying now. I mean, you go back when he was a true freshman and people were saying Gary Bohannon is one of the hardest working guys on this team. He's, you know, if you ever listen to him in a post game press conference or seen him act on the sideline, like, he's very clearly a team leader. And I think his overall game is just kind of underrated by fans in general. I think he brings a lot of stability to the position. Like, the highs aren't as high, but I think the lows aren't as low. And his ability to kind of consistently churn out yardage with his legs is a valuable asset. And he's a better passer than many realize. He can't see the field as well as Shapen. I don't think he can go through progressions as well as Shapen. But Gary still has an awesome deep ball. And he was able to put that to great effect last year. So obviously I could go on and on. I won't, because I'm kind of tired of talking about this at this point. But, you know, I think there's probably not a bad choice. I think the interesting aspect of this is what happens with potentially one of them transferring, or how it affects the roster, how it affects the team. But all of that is speculation and conjecture on that part. I don't know how those guys are going to make those decisions. And I don't envy whoever has to make those decisions or not make those decisions. That's, you know, you got 4 or 5 years to put your best foot forward in college. I don't like all the transferring stuff, but I don't blame guys for saying, like, look, you know, time is short. You know, I got to make the most of it now. So we'll see what happens on that front. Obviously, would love to hold on to both of them and hope that happens.
For the folks that don't know, Travis has been talking about the spring game. I don't think he slept for 72 hours. So this is from post-game content to now. We're getting like all of the ideas are already somewhere on paper, and now they're being splat out onto a podcast. So Travis, in terms of Gary Bohannon, okay, better passer, Blake Shapen, right? I mean,
a better pastor or a passer?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, while I have no idea of their religious beliefs, passer, yes. Give me Blake Shapen over Gary Bohannon. So, better runner, more efficient, more likely to pick up a chunk play with his legs and take a hit, Gary Bohannon, right?
Yeah.
Those gaps, which is larger? Is Gary just an exponentially better ball carrier? Is Shapen an exponentially better passer? Like, what's going to set these two apart in the end if it's not like headspace leadership?
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that question very well. I mean, it's just really tough because those aren't even necessarily equivalent weights. Like, obviously, being a passer matters just like 1,000 times more than being a runner. Like running really matters as a quarterback. I think it affects the numbers, especially in Baylor's offense. There's so many instances where if a defender doesn't have to account for the quarterback in the run game, it really changes the box that the running back is running into. So it matters a lot, but passing is the most efficient play in football. And if you can do it well, it's just like, there's basically nothing else you'd rather have in a player. So maybe that sort of answers that question, but
yeah,
I don't think they're as far apart passing wise as most would say. I mean, I think part of it is just the spring game where Gary didn't really have any opportunities to throw deep. They called two deep balls for him. And on the first one, he stood back in the pocket for a long time and then scrambled for 20 yards. So either he missed somebody that was open or there was nobody open. And then the second time there was pressure in his face, like instantly. And he just instantly left the pocket. So, but we know he's a great deep ball thrower. So it's kind of like what I was saying. I think Shapen brings more to the table as far as, maybe like if it was 3rd and 11, I absolutely want Blake Shapen out there instead of Gary Bohannon. Because a lot of times on like 3rd and long, like you have to really see the field and move to your 2nd, 3rd, and 4th options. But it's not always 3rd and 11. And, you know, if it's 2nd and 7 and you have to account for Gary's legs, you know, does that matter more? So I don't know. That's the kind of calculus, I guess, the coaches get paid the big bucks to try and figure out. It's tough to weigh it. But I don't really think they're necessarily as far apart as many imagine. And the other thing is Blake is a much better runner, actually, than I think people realize.
Yeah.
He's not actually a good... they're kind of the opposite. Gary's a very good designed runner. He's actually not a very good scrambler. I don't think he has great instincts for when to scramble versus when not to.
Yeah.
Blake is much more like Charlie Brewer in that, like, he's surprisingly athletic and good at scrambling, but not so much on design runs. So it's really interesting how contrasting the styles of play are between these two guys.
Travis, last question for you. And this is, I'm just going to pinpoint it down to one singular play in the spring game.
Okay.
Gary Bohannon's pick six. Is that on Gary? Is that on your receiver for the bobble, the throw behind?
Oh, no, it's on Gary. I gave it a negative my report. So,
a double negative is a positive, I think. I don't. A C in calculus.
Found the flaw in my system.
What did you see on that play? And is that play what Baylor fans could be worried about if he trots out at the number one against Albany next year?
Yeah, Albany's really going to be licking their chops trying to intercept
Gary. You've heard about the Albany secondary, man. Everybody knows Albany secondary.
Oh, okay. That might just be you.
Probably.
But no, that was absolutely on Gary. And I think it was demonstrative of one of his main weaknesses, which is when he is not kind of in the flow of things, or if a guy is wide open, sometimes you can see him like kind of pussyfoot the ball where he's just like aiming it. And not using full conviction on his throws. And that's what happened there. The guy was, you know, Seth Jones wasn't wide open in the flat, but in football terms, I mean, there was nobody within 3-4 yards of him, which is pretty much wide open. And Gary just kind of tried to aim the ball. And sometimes when that happens, I don't know if people see the video on this, Drake, but you know, the hand can get underneath the ball. It's like, you know, think about if you were playing, oh my gosh, what is this sport? Like hacky sack or not hacky sack. Good Lord.
Bago or like ping pong? Yeah. Like pong?
Like bean bags or pong. Bags. Yeah, perfect.
Pong.
Like pong,
okay. Yeah.
Like playing beverage
water pong. Baylor. Yeah.
You know, think about it that way where like your palm is kind of facing towards the sky and you're really finessing things. And what that causes the ball to do if you throw a football like that is it'll float on you. You have to, you know, when you throw a football, it has to be with conviction. The ball has to come cleanly out of your hand, the spiral, everything's kind of facing downward and forward. Anyway, the ball floated on him and we've seen that happen before. So in that sense, that play was demonstrative of his weaknesses because it floated on him. It was behind the receiver. I also think it's a great example of turnover luck though. Luck is something that fans hate thinking about in football, but it's very real. About a third of balls that are passes defended by like if a defensive back breaks up a pass, a third of them are intercepted. And, you know, sometimes it's obvious it hits a guy straight in the hands and you're like, well, that's not lucky. But, you know, there's a lot of other balls that are kind of just like tipped up in the air. And I think that play is a great example of like when luck goes against you. Blake Shapen had a double negative, double minus throw that was terrible in the end zone to Drake Dabney that was well underthrown. And it was broken up by a defender and the ball floated up in the air and then just kind of fell harmlessly on the ground in between a couple of defenders. But you could very imagine that ball floating in a different direction and right into a defender's arm. So anyway, I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
if that ball isn't intercepted by Gary and the ball by Chapin was intercepted, would you have a different opinion of them? In reality, you shouldn't have a different opinion of them dependent on whether that ball was intercepted or not, because the throw is the throw is the throw, right? And so I think that's the challenge. And when you have such a small sample size, you really have to hone in on, like, what's important here? What did the quarterbacks control? How did they perform? And I'm not using that as an excuse for Gary or anything like that. I'm just saying for any time you're evaluating, you got to do that. You know, keep in mind the small sample size, but absolutely Blake had a better day. But I was told by people who were at the previous scrimmages from multiple people that Gary very clearly looked like the better quarterback in the previous two scrimmages. So was it just the day, the small sample size? Who knows? But either way, I think Baylor has two really good quarterbacks.
Guess we'll find out when we play it on the gridiron next fall. Travis, thank you for utilizing what parts of your football brain are left.
I know.
To join Locked On Baylor today.
I'm going to go finish my dinner.
I love it. All right, now I want to tell you about betonline.net. It's your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Right now, Major League Baseball, NBA, those are big. You can go do some sports betting if you're over 21. Of course, if it's legal wherever you are, at betonline.net. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the actions. BetOnline, where the game starts. Visit betonline.net to get started today. All right, we now welcome in Michael Woodson, the men's tennis coach at Baylor University and the now two-time for you individually defending Big 12 champion as a head coach, three-time overall for the program. Coach, first and foremost, it's a great Tuesday for a cowboy hat. Second most, congratulations on another Big 12 championship.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on, as always. You know, really excited to still from what was an incredible weekend. You know, the matches against Texas and TCU, our guys stepped up in every single position throughout the weekend. So it was amazing atmosphere. We had a ton of Baylor fans and supporters that helped us through. And yeah, it's just still buzzing.
Coach, this team in general this season, I know you were replacing a couple key pieces last year that went to the national championship. And to go back-to-back in a Big 12 championship against a team in TCU that you had just lost to, how gratifying is it that it's not just a rival, but a school that beat you on your home court and you got to avenge that in Fort Worth?
Yeah, it was definitely a bitter taste in our mouth losing to TCU. We felt that was obviously a huge match. It was coming off of a great win at Texas. And when we lost in what was a great match, you know, we lost 4-3. It was really tough. Sven lost a three-setter, you know, that decided it. And we felt like that was it, that we were going to lose the Big 12 regular season on that. And it was close, but it turned out we did, you know, that we were super hungry, you know, but also confident going into the tournament, knowing that we had beaten all the teams in the tournament. You know, we had beaten TCU handily in Fort Worth and felt really good going into it, but knew it wasn't going to be easy. So we were very hungry, but confident having been there the last 4 years.
Coach, for those that didn't see it, it was such a weird happenstance where weather hits in the middle of a tightly contested match, one where you have two courts left to decide the Big 12 championship, and then Matias Soto and Sven Law have to move from outdoors to indoors at a different facility. Number one, how weird is that? And two, how crucial was it you had two experienced guys in that position?
You know, I mean, to be honest, we were planning for this all weekend. The weather looked bad on Sunday from Monday of last week. And so we were able to get indoors on Thursday. We were able to get indoors on Friday. I'm not sure there was another team that hit inside at that tournament. And so I really felt like we were doing a great job of preparing the guys just in case it happened. And all Saturday night we talked about was, hey, we're going to be ready. Wherever we have to play, if it's out in the grassy field, if it's in the football stadium, we're going to be ready to go. So we just need to stay focused. And whenever the rain comes, we're going to be ready for it. And it actually held off longer than we thought it was. You know, we were close, very close to winning. Finn was just a few points away from clinching the match. And, you know, at the time that it happened, I couldn't have think of two better guys to be in that situation. Guys that have won, you know, every year in the Big 12 championship finals. Those guys have delivered. And, you know, we were in positions where very difficult close matches, but guys that I thought would handle that moment well. We were very fortunate to have a team of guys that loved each other so much that they were ready to do whatever it took to support from off the court, and a ton of fans that stuck around. And the atmosphere inside, even though the ESPN Plus video stream wasn't working, the atmosphere was honestly something I don't know that we'll ever experience again. It was special.
Coach, it's so interesting to me, for Adrian Boyton, who has just been mowing through everyone he's faced this season, and then he drops his single match in the Big 12 championship, and you guys still win it. What does it say about the depth of this team that your best singles player can lose that match, which when you have a guy with the morale that he does, your team is still able to rally and win it all against the number one team in the country?
Yeah, I mean, that was his first loss of the entire year. And so that's it was honestly made it even more special. I think it was exactly what he needed to see, too. You know, for 4 years, he's put the team on his back and has led us with his play up at the top of the lineup every single year. In the past Big 12 championships, he's clinched both of them the last 2 years. And so for us to be able to deliver wins on Saturday and Sunday without getting his singles point, I know he was in a position to win on Saturday, but he didn't finish, was really incredible. I think it was good for him to see. I think it was good for the guys to see that they can do it. And, you know, we have all the confidence in the world in these guys that we have 9 great spots and we're really starting to fire away. I think that was the best we've played on every single court, maybe outside of Adrian's. It was still a great match. Famba's a fantastic player. You know, this season, I mean, really, it was impressive. And I think it gives us just a ton of confidence moving into NCAAs.
You talk about going into the NCAA tournament, and what is so intriguing about the match a few weeks ago where TCU came to the Herd. I remember you saying the winner of this should be the number one team in the country come the next rankings. And, you know, TCU ended up being in the Big 12 tournament, the number one team in the nation. Do you feel as though after this win, your team has earned that right?
There's a lot of great teams in the country. You know, I think we're going to be 2 or 3, probably based on how the rankings work. You know, if we were to end up behind TCU for seeding purposes, they may flip us because we beat them two times and they only beat us once. But a lot is still yet to be played. The Big Ten hasn't played yet. And honestly, I think we went in last year the number 2 seed at NCAAs, and it felt better than being the 1. I'd prefer to just have all the eyes elsewhere. You know, seeing stuff that said that we were going to lose in the Big 12 tournament, or there are all these teams that are better than us. Our guys like that. A little chip on our shoulders is a nice thing. So I think these guys have earned the highest ranking possible with what they've done this year and the difficult schedule they've gone through, but we'll take where we're at and run with it.
Well, now you get the opportunity to play your first few matches at home in the NCAAs too. So being in Waco, where your team went all but undefeated this season, only one loss, that being to the formerly number one team in the country, what does it say to now have the home crowd behind you at the Herd?
NCAA tournament play at home is amazing. You know, to get to play prime time under the lights, win or go home, win or stay home in some rounds is special. And it's been, I think, the best atmosphere at home I've been a part of was when we played in the Super Regional in 2019 against UCLA, round of 16. That was insane. I had chills watching the crowd walk up before the national anthem. And, you know, I think I expect the crowd to be similar this year. I think we were, you know, COVID robbed us of the round of 16 at home last year, but they're going back to the original format. So, you know, I know it's going to be really difficult. Every team that makes the tournament is tough. And so we'll have to be ready for the first round, and we're going to take it one match at a time, but we're really looking forward to playing at home again. These guys love it.
Coach, last question for you here. Coming off of last season, where you come up one match short of being national champions, now going into this NCAA tournament, how much of that experience plays into your opportunity to win a national championship now?
I think it's invaluable. You just can't put a price on experience. And you saw that yesterday in the biggest moments, even the day before in the semis against Texas. The margins are so close. These players are all such a high level player, such high level teams, that it's not really about tennis in the end of these matches. It's about who handles the moment better, who can play as close to their level as possible under pressure. And our guys did that extremely well. TCU hadn't played in a Big 12 championship final since 2017. None of these guys had ever been in it. Our guys have been in it 4 years in a row. Probably would have been five if we had played in 2020. So I felt just that we were in a really good spot, and our guys looked extremely confident under pressure. So I know, if we can get to that position down the line in the NCAA tournament, that we're going to be ready.
Coach, I love it. Thanks so much for joining the show today. Congratulations on a Big 12 championship. Best of luck in the NCAAs, and we will see you again, I'm sure, very soon.
Sounds great, Drake. Thanks for everything. Appreciate all the work you're doing here.
Well, what a way to end the day with Michael Woodson, Big 12 champion in men's tennis. Oh, man. Dude, get me fired up for postseason tennis. That guy, probably single-handedly the reason that I've become such a tennis fan. If you follow me on Twitter, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I want to thank you right now, right here, right now, for making Locked On Baylor your first listen every day. Make your second listen Locked On NFL Draft. Ryan Tracy and former NFL cornerback Eric Crocker bring the NFL Draft to life every day with insight and analysis on college football prospects and NFL front offices. Locked On NFL Draft, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening on YouTube, hit the subscribe thing, do that or whatever. I don't know. Like it, comment. I'm not sure. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else, thanks for listening. Spread the word. This has been and will be tomorrow too. Come back tomorrow. Gonna be a great show as we talk more Baylor football. I'm riding a football high. We're not getting down from it yet. Come back tomorrow. There'll be less cowboy hat, but still the same energy, because this is Locked On Baylor.